built myself up a little bit too much. You're all excited. I don't know if I can meet the expectations. As I was saying this morning, one of my goals is to finish on time, and I obviously went way over this morning. And I have enough. I had enough for probably another sermon, so the only way I could fit it all in today was to make it tonight. And our theme this morning was the morning worship service, and part of that was what I call the children's ministries. And I have a whole sermon on what we can do about children's ministries. And one of the things that I sort of lined up with my new smartphone was Tina Bennett. We're going to play a game called Name That Tune. So as soon as you think you know the song, stand up, or maybe if you can't stand up, raise your hand, and I'll try to see you, and I'll keep score, and we'll try it. I don't know if it'll work. Go ahead, Tina.
I took myself back off.
Thank you.
They don't like me to play this.
No, don't yell it out. Karen. All right, Karen. All right, go ahead. All right. Once you get one, don't answer again. Okay. Krista, go ahead. Next one. Kelly. Okay. All right. Go ahead. Dave, I think, or Don? All right, Dave. Right. Ann. All right. Okay. No, that's the one I had next. Jim. Yes, Jimmy P. All right. Roger. There was a little collusion going on. All right, go ahead. No. Day or Don DeBoer. Yes, PD. Lori. And once you get one, you're on the list, and then we're going to have a final. Okay. You're going to have a final. I didn't know this one. Guys in the back knew it. Okay, Karen, would it be best for you, all the people that have got a point, come up here? Karen, Krista, Kelly, Dave DeBoer, Ann, Carrie, Jim Potts, Roger, Pastor Don, Lori. Okay. And this is where the competition's about to get really fierce. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's 7 songs left. Whoever can get the most points out of these last 7 songs will be the winner. Whoever gets the most points out of 7. Okay, there's 7 songs. Raise your hand, get my attention. Okay. All right, go ahead, Tina. Wow! That was good. Dave DeBoer. Correct. Yes, now you do it as many times. All right, go ahead. Oh, it was either Krista or Pastor Don. Krista.
What is the title?
Pastor Don, what is it?
I'm so glad that Jesus loves me.
What is it, Pastor Don? She didn't get it right.
I'm so glad that Jesus loves me.
Carrie. Carrie. All right, go ahead. Next one. All right. I didn't know that one. Go ahead. Lori. Ann. All right. What we're going to do is Ann and Lori each have two. So this is the tiebreaker. I don't even know this one. Have a winner. We have a winner. Climb aboard the gospel train. I didn't even know that one. But anyway, tonight I want to talk about children's ministries. I think those were all pretty much children's songs. And specifically, I will be sort of mainly highlighting the 11 o'clock children's ministries, but I don't want to limit it to that because we have Wednesday night children's ministries as well, and we have Sunday school. But I've been talking about this morning the 11 o'clock service. The main service is the highest profile. It's when guests are most likely to bring their children. It's when one of the times when we run a bus and van. And this is one of the places, I think, where we need empathy. I talked about empathy this morning. When guests bring in children, they will always be apprehensive at first. And they need assurances that our ministries are, number one, properly staffed, and number two, that their children will be safe. Now, I have very small children. They're unable to talk. They're unable to take care of themselves. A couple of them communicate. So this seems sort of obvious to me. It's near and dear to my heart. But is it obvious to all of us? Guests are apprehensive about leaving their children until they're assured that they're safe and that the ministry is properly staffed. Now, I don't know about you folks, but I was saved when I was very young, around 5 years old. Can anyone here relate to that? Some of you? Now, anyone between 5 and 18, you were saved. Most of the rest of you. And I think it was around 12 years old that I was in a baptism class. Our pastor actually taught. It was about a 10-week baptismal preparation class, and I was in that class, and I wanted to make sure I was saved, and I prayed a prayer of assurance, but I think I was probably really saved when I was 5. And over the years of ministry, I've learned that I am not alone, even by the show of hands tonight. Many people share my story. Most people are saved under 10 years old. In fact, statistics say that 80 to 85% of all born-again believers were saved before they were 18 years old. And 50% of those were saved before age 12. Now, this really shouldn't surprise us that much because Jesus cared about children. Jesus emphasized children in his ministry. In fact, if you have a Bible, find Matthew 19. And this story is actually recorded in all four of the Gospels. I looked it up in all four Gospels, and I wanted to see if there was some finer point or difference between them, and they were all pretty much exactly the same. Matthew chapter 19, we'll just pick the first one. There's nothing special why I picked Matthew. It's in Luke and Mark and John as well. Matthew chapter 19. scan ahead till you find verse 13. It says, "Then little children were brought to him that he might put his hands on them and pray. But the disciples rebuked them. But Jesus said, 'Let the little children come to me and do not forbid them, for such is the kingdom of heaven.' And he laid his hands on them and he departed from there." Not a whole lot of verses to study, but what I see is that children's ministry was a high priority for Jesus. Apparently, the disciples didn't think so. What were they trying to do? Push the kids away? Jesus doesn't have time for you. There's higher priorities. And what did Jesus say? What did Jesus do? There's the word that starts with R. Rebuked, okay? When you hear somebody rebuke somebody, that connotates that it's pretty strong, isn't it? I mean, it's not like, oh, he slapped them on the wrist, okay? No, no, no. It says he rebuked them. He called them out. And he said what? Let them come. Don't forbid them. Let them come. Don't forbid them. Jesus was explaining an immensely important truth about children. When you are a child, it is a time of life, usually, as I said, between around the age of 4 or 5 to about the age of 18, when you are most teachable, when you're most moldable, more than they ever will be the rest of their lives. And children in their minds are formulating their concepts of God. They're learning about creation. They're trying to learn about the love of God and everything else in the Bible. And they are very impressionable. So we as a church should take advantage of that. Now, I know that sounds sort of weird. Take advantage of... We're not trying to take advantage of children, okay? Don't get me wrong. We're not here to manipulate children. We are here to leverage their season of life as an opportunity. And in fact, if we really think about it, our greatest opportunity to reach people for the Lord is when they're children. Now, missionaries have what is called the 1040 window. Anybody ever heard that term, the 1040 window? The pastors have. Anybody else besides the pastor and their family? 1040 window? Tommy, you don't know what it is. Put your hand down. Krista, tell us what the 1040 window is. Oh, okay, you were nodding your head. I thought that meant you knew. Oh, okay. All right. What? What is it? Nope. Nope. The 1040 window that missionaries talk about is the latitude lines, or which ones go east-west? Longitude lines between the 10 and the 40, which is a section above it and below the equator. When you look at a world map, that it contains the countries of India and Indonesia, Malaysia, China, the middle and heart of Africa and Brazil, they say that window of longitude is where the vast majority of the 7 billion people on planet Earth live. And that is also the area that's least reached by missionaries. So oftentimes missionaries talk about this 1040 window where we need to send more missionaries to countries between those lines. Now, if you start to talk to a group of children's pastors, they don't talk about the 1040 window. They talk about the 4 to 18 window. Children's pastors have talked about this because they're using wisdom. That is the most likely age that a person will be born again. And when we start to think about that, as a church, what we are doing during this window may be the most important thing that our church does. Yet, if we take out the annual report even, the ministry to that age group is often not thought of as ministry because it comes across like we're pulling teeth. We need to serve these kids. We need people to help with this. We need people to work in the nursery. We need people to teach in junior church and students. And people are like, oh, I don't want to do that. That's not ministry. That's work. And this is by no means a new phenomenon. 60 years ago, a church leader wrote, when you look at most churches, their programming, staff, and budget, it would appear that children must first become prodigals, then we will go about putting together elaborate programs and events to save them. 60 years ago, that was written. And one of the points I'd like to express tonight is unsaved adults, they're everywhere. And I'm not saying we don't need to reach them. We need to reach them, but it's going to be difficult to reach them. And then we have children, and they're only children for a short time. But yet in this time frame, an entire course of life can be changed for God's glory. So how many adult problems would be solved if every child who came to this church, our church, knew Jesus loved them? What if more kids' hearts could be turned to Jesus because of our ministry? And what if more kids were told that Jesus cares everything about them? What if every high school student in Fenton made a life commitment to serve Christ, or at least was given the opportunity? And I believe in Matthew 19, it's also in Mark and Luke and John, I believe Jesus was telling his disciples that God intends that we should invest heavily in children. I think that's what he's telling his disciples. Let them come. You need to spend time with them. You need to invest in them while they're still young, while they're still sensitive to things of God. So when we're talking about ministry, when we're talking about budgets, when we're talking about finances, potentially the most strategic use of our resources, which would bear the most fruit for the kingdom of God, would be spending it on children and students. And if we're thinking from a business perspective, it's if we spend money on students, it is likely to bring in more parents too. If kids like our church, what do you think parents will do? What do you think parents will do? Support the church, come to church, yeah. A few weeks ago, my family and I, we went up to Birch Run in Frankenmuth, and we went into Bronner's. And in Bronner's, you can see Santa Claus for free. Like, you know, if you go to the mall, you have to pay money to just sit on his lap and get a picture. Bronner's, you can go there, sit on Santa's lap, talk to him. You can take pictures, and it's all free. And you know what? There was a huge line. Ever been in a Santa Claus line? We were in this big, long Santa Claus line, and there's a reason parents do that. They want their children to be happy and have fun. And if we're doing that for their children here at our church, where do you think they will come? Here. One person wrote, one of the best investments you can make for your church is great children's facilities. And like I said, from a purely business standpoint, what I'm about to say doesn't really sound spiritual. It's just from a business point of view. The author says, updating your children's facilities will pay for themselves many times over by the families they bring in. So I think we have some significant work that needs to be done in our children and student facilities. And in fact, in a few minutes, part of this, make it one of the most memorable nights we've had, I actually want to take you on a tour and show you some stuff. And you can, once again, you can have a piece of paper and pen. I want you to look up, look down, look all around. If you see something that is in disrepair, if you see something that just doesn't look right, make a note. I really want you to see our children's facilities. And, you know, maybe something as simple as cleaning, uncluttering, big time. We have a big time problem with clutter. Now, this seems obvious. What I'm about to say seems obvious. But if you see something broken in children's ministry area, we need to get rid of it right away. There was a pool table apparently down there for months that said, broken, do not use. Why would we have that in the children's area? It needs to be removed, gotten rid of. In the children's area, we cannot have anything that's dangerous. Fix it or pitch it. Okay? Don't hesitate with that. Don't wait. We would not want to have an accident. Thankfully, when the head usher presented his report, he said there was only one accident that he really reported. There was another one, a child fell down a couple steps. I think he ended up being okay. But we don't want any accidents. So we're going to walk around the church. We're going to look at the children's area. You're going to see firsthand that we have a lot of room for improvement. The other area before we go on this tour is staffing. We struggle to staff our children's and student ministries properly. We simply don't have enough workers. I'm just being honest. And think about the workers we do have. Do you think any of them might be on the verge of burnout? We all get tired. We get cranky when we work around junior high students and nursery kids. You know, walk through the nursery, and the nursery duty maybe seems like a black hole. There's bad smells, loud cries, and spraying bodily fluids. But all these ministries are very vital. Now, I've heard, as I said many times, I've been reading articles and reading books and different things. I've heard lots of reasons why people leave churches. And then I've thought, what are the reasons that over the years that people have given me for leaving this church? Let's put it in this church, not some existential, why do people leave churches? Why do people leave this church? And since 2008, the number one reason why people have left this church is children's ministries or lack thereof. At least the number of children present in the ministries was the biggest reason. I can recall, and I could regurgitate these names if you wanted me to, I can recall six families coming to me saying that they were going to leave because there was not enough children. So I think there's some things we need to do. I have this list sort of typed out. Number one, make sure all children's room are clean, toys sanitized, broken toys and clutter thrown away, and other things properly stored. Never allow broken items to hang around the church. They need to be disposed of immediately. Follow through with our current check-in and check-out policy for the infant and toddler nurseries. We have this really neat pager system. It's not very difficult at all. They each have a number. You write a number and the last name of the child. And you take it out of the little holder and you hand it to an adult as the parent or grandparent or whoever gives you the kid. And if there's a problem with that child, all you do is hit, if for instance it's one, you hit one and enter. That's it. Two, enter. And the pager starts going off wherever they're at on the church property. And then that parent is notified to come back there, change a diaper, help a crying, fussy baby or whatever. And also that provides security, because if some stranger came in that maybe we didn't really know the child and they come in, oh yeah, you know, that's my son. It could be some custody battle or dispute and they're not even around that child. I want that child. Well, you can't have that child until you give us the pager. So it's very, very important to actually use that. If you work in the nursery and don't know how to use that, speak to myself, speak to my wife. We will show you how to use that system. I've observed and watched. There's been times when first-time guests were not issued a pager. Guess what? They're not back. Not seen them. What did they think? This church has no security, safety precautions for the kids? I don't know. So we need to abide by our current safety policies, distribute the pagers, inform the parents as they come in. This is the reason why we hand out the pagers. Also, we need to make sure some Bible story and activity is done with the toddlers each Sunday morning during the main worship service. And then all nursery workers need to assure parents how much we value the safety and well-being of every child. And that wouldn't be just for nursery workers. That would be for junior church, especially first-time guests. That would be Wednesday night. Anybody that's dropped off for the very first time, we need to assure them. All our children's workers go through background checks. They've all been briefed and trained. Okay. You know, some of us, when we first instituted that, we were a little bit apprehensive. You've known me for 30 years. You know I'm not bad. Did you know every new person that's come since 2008, we've said, hey, you need to take this. Oh, yeah, of course. It's like obvious to them. It's expected. Value the safety and well-being of every child. Every parent needs to be assured of that. Then we need to back that up with our actions. Which means that unnecessary people should not go into the nursery. It cannot be a crowded area. If you want to chat, if you want to talk, do so outside the nursery. If the nursery is packed with chatting parents, rowdy teens, or out-of-control elementary students, no parent will feel comfortable about leaving their child there for the first time, and they most definitely will not be back for a second visit. Another thing I have on my list here, sick child policies need to be reviewed and then enforced. If a child's sick, they need to stay home or out of the nursery. And then make sure every parent is clear as to how we will contact them if they need a diaper change. And I sort of explained that with the pager or crying baby. And they also need to ask the parents, well, like my wife, she changes diapers all week. She knows you and loves you and trusts you. You can go ahead and, she told the nursery workers, go ahead and change their diapers. You don't have to page me, okay? We could ask that of the parents, what they would rather have do. Maybe a child's just learning how to potty and a parent would rather take them to the potty. Page them. And then there's all kinds of other things to consider on Wednesday night. We have a bus with how many students come? 20? We've had as few as maybe 18 to 20 and as many as 30. I think the highest night I ever recall was 37, and that was when we had the old bus and we actually legally couldn't fit 37 on there. So we have a new bus. It might be wise. William's on that bus by himself. It might be wise to have one chaperone at the front and one at the back. I mean, there's all kinds of things. The only thing we're limited by is adequate staff. So if you would, if you're able and would like to, Tina, question. Since I've been here, I think that's one of the woefully unaddressed areas with our children's ministries. Yeah, more singing. That'd be great. That'd be great. Love it. So if you're able, maybe stand up and we'll file down and we'll go look at some of the children's ministry area. I don't know if we'll have time to make it down to the youth room. But if you can't walk or don't want to come, you can stay in here and pray. Pray for Mark Mortar, pray for the children's ministries, whatever. And then we got to come back here. Pastor Don really wants to sing a song.
Solo.
No, congregation.